Bible reading this morning comes from Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 through 30. You have heard it is said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh upon a woman to lust after her have committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell.
Good morning. Please have your Bibles open to where Larry just read for us, Matthew chapter 5. If you're using the Pew Bibles, that's on page 810, Matthew chapter 5, page 810. It is great to see so many of you with us on this Sunday morning. I noticed right towards the end of me doing the announcements, Linda Miller is with us, and it's good to see Linda. We're always blessed when she's able to be back with us. There's so many of you others as well. Sam and Shirley are with us again. It's been a while since we've seen them. And all of you who are visiting with us, we're blessed by your presence on this special day. If you weren't with us last week, we began a new series. It's going to be on the Sermon on the Mount. We started last week with the previous passage in Matthew 5, really starting with verse 17, where Jesus says that he didn't come to abolish the law, talking about the old law, what we might call the Old Testament. He came to fulfill it. And this series is going to be all about how Jesus took things that were being taught and said in his day and time. In Larry's reading, the things you might say, the teachings from old, the way Jesus would say it is, you have heard that it was said. Things that were old, things that were tried, and things that had failed. And in our day and time, there are things that are old, and there are things that have been tried, and these things have failed because their approach has not been God's approach. As far as the way we see one another, the way we see the world, and the way we see our relationship with God. Last week we talked about how God is more concerned about who we are than what we do. Our very character, our nature, who we are from within, that's where everything begins. That is the root of our existence. And if on the outside we just put on a good show and we just go through the motions, God sees through that. And that ultimately is not who we are. We are not just the things that we do. We are who we are. Now, if we are who we are supposed to be, the right things will flow from that. In many ways, today's passage, having to do with lust, adultery, divorce, they're a continuation of those things of who we are is far more important than just what we do. And we'll get more into that in just a moment. But I invite you to be a part of this series. Really, it's going to go over the next couple of months. We're going to go through the meat, the main body of the message of the Sermon on the Mount. Probably one of, if not the most popular passages of Scripture, especially in the New Testament, especially as far as an extended passage goes, the most famous sermon of all time. And what I said last week is if you just read the Sermon on the Mount, if you read it every day, it'd just take a few minutes to read Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. But even if you read it once a week, but I challenge you to read it every day. Read this section. Take it to heart. I promise you if you do that, it will transform your life. Even if you've known this passage for decades, if you've been a Christian for a long time, if this is your favorite passage of Scripture, if we keep reading this, taking it to heart, and then living by it, it will change us. Because this is the stuff that's rooted in God. It will make us new again. Our theme this year is All Things New. And we can be renewed each day if we could just live by the principles of the Sermon on the Mount. Most of you know I grew up with my grandpa as the preacher I listened to more than anybody else. Pretty much every week, would hear him two times on Sunday, and as I got older, sometimes in Bible class on Wednesday as well. Grandpa was in many ways, was a simple man, but he was a very sincere man, and his sincerity about what it means to be family in the context of being a Christian was one of the topics he was most passionate about. When he would talk about the family, what it means to be a husband, a wife, a mother, a father, a child, what it means to be who we are within our families. That was something that he took it personally. It showed in his life, and it showed in his sermons as well. But from time to time in his sermons, he would mention some statistics on divorce. And this would especially be back in the 1980s when I was growing up and first remembering hearing sermons and starting to digest the content. And I remember Grandpa many times would say that the divorce rate when I was a kid was 50%. That one in two marriages, now it's important to note, not one in two people, but one in two marriages in the United States back in the 1980s was ending in divorce. And if you go back and look at the statistics, those are not fabricated. There are statistics to support from the government that one in two marriages back then was ending in divorce. I've got good news for you today. Guess what? The divorce rate in the United States has gone down. It's lower today than it has been in really decades. Going back really to around 1970 is about where we have returned as far as the divorce rate. That's the good news. I'm here to tell you something else. The good news really isn't good news. The reason why the divorce rate today is lowering, and it's going to continue to lower probably for the foreseeable future, is because the marriage rate in the United States is at its all-time lowest. Fewer people are getting married today than ever before, per capita. At least as far as you can go back with the government taking these statistics, counting them. And I dare say that rate is only going to get lower as well. If you turn on the news tonight or this week, I can almost promise you that there will be a story, or there will be many stories, about how different groups of people in the United States today are having a hard time getting along. That's been a big part of really the election year, is of how different demographic groups, and you don't need me to list all these groups, but how different demographic groups just aren't getting along, and how we are a divided nation. And to some degree, that's true. But you know what? There are two groups that are not getting along today that nobody's paying attention to. And I'm of the opinion that these are the two most important groups that need to get along in order for us to be a healthy, functional, and civilized society. And that is men and women. And whether you look at the relationships between men and women through the divorce rate, or maybe now more appropriately through the marriage rate and our lack of marriage that's taking place in the United States, there is a commentary, there is something to be said there about the nature of our relationships with one another as men and women, and it's not good. You have heard that it was said, is how Jesus begins so many of the things that he's going to address in the Sermon on the Mount. And when he starts in verse 27, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. Well, just like last week when we talked about anger, how the Jews of his day would say, you know, we've heard that it was said based on the Ten Commandments, you shall not murder. Well, we're not murdering. Look at what a good moral society we are. We are not murdering one another. The Jews, again, they would look at their Ten Commandments that says, you shall not commit adultery. They'd look around them and say, you know what? People aren't committing adultery. What a good moral society we live within here in Israel. Now, you look at Rome, obviously there's all kinds of adultery going on in Rome, but not around here, not in these parts of Jerusalem, not around the Sea of Galilee, not among God's people. This kind of stuff isn't taking place. Jesus would say, really? Have you opened your eyes to the situation at hand? When Jesus addresses lust and adultery and divorce, you know what he's declaring to his people? You have heard you should not commit adultery, but I tell you this, adultery is everywhere. and you haven't even recognized it. It's in your hearts, it's in your attitudes, and yeah, it's even in the things that you are currently practicing. Jesus is going to revolutionize their old teachings about how they approached one another as men and women. He's going to say, I want to give you something new. I'm going to tell you something new, that if you are willing to live by this as men and women, and by the way, men, when you read this passage, Jesus is especially speaking to the males in his audience. Partly because of the nature of relationships between men and women throughout all of history, where we have more often been in the positions of power and in control, but also in the recognition of sometimes the realities of life. And maybe today, if Jesus was speaking to us and delivering the same kind of sermon, maybe he would spend a little bit more time in speaking to the women as well. But he's giving us universal principles that apply just as equally to men as they do to women. He says, your approach to the opposite sex has not been working. And I feel very confident that if Jesus was in our midst today, he would say, our approach to one another still isn't working. We need something new. And the world has never offered anything new, especially when it comes to the nature of our relationships between men and women. He's going to talk about what a broken existence these two issues of lust and divorce has rendered to us as not just human beings and not just as citizens, but especially as souls who have been made in the image of God. That is Jesus' foremost concern. And yes, some of the things I have to say today and some of the things I've already said, they will make us different as a society. They will make us different in the here and now. But more importantly, don't miss Jesus' main point, his focus. This is about who we are from within and the fact that we are souls. We have physical bodies, but we are souls. And with our physical bodies, sometimes our souls have been broken. That's the first thing Jesus is going to highlight in these passages, verses 27 through 30, that Larry's already read for us. I'm not going to read it again, but he's going to talk about the brokenness of lust. Now, you don't hear too many people talking about how bad, how destructive lust is for us today. And in Jesus' day and time, you certainly weren't hearing people say that. They were saying, don't commit adultery. As long as you don't commit adultery, everything is fine as far as your relationship, especially to your spouse. And for those who are single, as long as you don't commit the physical act of immorality, everything is fine. Jesus says that's what you've heard. But I want to tell you something else. That if you look after another person, and specifically he says to men, if you look after a woman as an object of your desire, you might be able to say, I didn't touch her. You know, we have a saying today, you can look but don't touch. Well, that's the kind of thinking people had back then. These men could say, I didn't do anything. Jesus would say, you've already done it. You say you haven't committed adultery. You've committed adultery in your heart because that's who you are from within. You've only been concerned about what you do. But you're already broken from within in the way that you view the opposite sex. And whether it was thousands of years ago or today, lust is the primary problem. Lust is the primary problem because of this. Because we believe that other people exist for our desire. That other people exist just to fulfill our pleasure. And some people might say, well, I'm not hurting that person. I haven't done anything to violate that person. But Jesus' point isn't necessarily what you've done or not done to that person. It's what's going on from within your very heart, because in the process, you are destroying yourself. You are removing the spiritual component from your existence. And what you are destroying as far as your relationship to the other person is you now believe that you are in control. You are in the position of power. That person belongs to you. If I look at another woman besides Caroline with this kind of lust in my heart, what I am declaring, whether I recognize it or not, is that that person exists for me. That person, all they're good for is however they might be able to fulfill my own desire. Even from just, somebody might say, well, it's just for viewing pleasure. Nobody's being harmed. Aren't those the mantras of our day? Either the two things that you most often hear, well, nobody's getting hurt, or sometimes we have consenting adults in the situation. How well has that worked out for individuals or for entire societies? Has that transformed us into a better, more loving society? No, not at all. You look at all the issues we're dealing with today as a result, as a byproduct of lust. And when you really begin to break down the nature of those things, what are they about? They are about control and they are about ownership. They are about this other person exists for me, for my selfish benefit. The pornography industry, that's what it's all about. It's about how can one capitalize upon another in their state, sometimes of weakness? How can capitalize upon another for financial profit? How can capitalize upon another for gratification? But in all of those relationships, what do we have there? We have power, we have control, and we have sometimes, many times, manipulation. Somebody being in a position of dominance upon another person. Again, people would say, well, you know, this is a free society. Yeah, it's a free society. But in a free society, you can become enslaved to that kind of mindset. And so now we hear people commonly talk about addiction in these areas. People whose whole lives, and yes, even now their brain chemistry has been transformed because they've been trapped. And it began with them just thinking, this isn't going to hurt anybody. This is consensual. And it extends beyond that. You look at the problem, the growing problem of human trafficking throughout the world. What is that about? That is about power and control and dominance and using somebody in a position of weakness, especially using them physically in order to personally benefit and profit from it. Some are financially profiting from it. Some are physically finding benefit from it. You look at our entertainment industry in general. How often are people trying to... You look at a commercial for your average movie and your average TV show. By average, I mean just the stuff that's on and typically seen as popular right now. You look at a 30-second commercial and you try to find one for a nighttime program or for a movie that's coming out this weekend. And as long as it's not one of the animated movies, I can almost guarantee you if they are trying to appeal to a teenage or an adult audience, they're going to have something in that commercial that is at least innuendo or suggestive or sometimes just blatantly sexual. Why? Because they're trying to benefit off of people's weakness and off of their desire. And there are many people who will go to that movie or see that show because they want to see, what does it have to offer me Can I see this person in this kind of situation? And we just come to accept this is just the way the world is. Many parents today are telling teenagers, you know, as long as you don't get physically active, lust is okay. Or as long as you don't reach a certain point, everything else is okay. Is that what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount? Is that any kind of solution to the real problem at the root of the way we view one another? You see, if I view the opposite sex as existing just for my pleasure, one, that makes me an incredibly twisted and selfish soul. And it demeans the value, the inherent value that God has placed on that other person. And I no longer see that person as a soul. I see that person as an object. We talk about objectifying human life. That is how it's done. When I view others just for my benefit, especially when it comes to the sexual domain, that's where it all breaks down. And as sad as it is, we should not be surprised. With all these things going on within our society, we should not be surprised when we see so many young people today, and so many adults as well. It's not just an issue with young people, but so many young people, so many adults suffering from body image issues. Because we have declared as a society that you're only as good, you're only as valuable as your physical worth, as your attractiveness, especially to the opposite sex. We declared in entertainment, we declared in our media. Turn on the nightly news. Ladies, I don't mean to offend you. You don't see too many older women doing the nightly news anymore, do you? Have you ever wondered why that is? Well, I can tell you why it is. It's going to draw more viewers. That's a sad commentary. And so our young people and even adults have these issues today of how we view ourselves, because we as a society are declaring you're only as good as how others view you physically. And so young people, in trying to increase their sense of value or self-worth, who've bought in to these lies of Satan and lies of society, they send the most humiliating of images of themselves to one another now. They're trying to meet a standard that the world has established. We react in shock and horror when it's the young people. But then when Kim Kardashian does it, everybody flocks to Google to see what it looks like. There's an inconsistent message there. And we as a society have got to change. And even if we as a society don't change, guess what? Those of us who follow Jesus, we have heard things said. Jesus says, I want to tell you something new. What takes place in your heart? That's what matters. And if we have such a broken view of sexuality and lust in the world, we should not be surprised when we have a broken view of divorce. Because that's how Jesus continues in verse 31. He says, it was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. The brokenness of divorce. Jesus here, in talking to his audience again, it would have been a Jewish audience, they would have said, we don't have adultery going on among us. Jesus would say, yes, you do. Look at how you're practicing marriage and divorce in your very midst. Theirs was a bit different than our time, but there are a lot of similarities. Moses and his law, and Jesus lays this out very clearly in Matthew 19. Moses, and just seeing how broken marriage was and divorce was in his society, put in place a system where, especially a husband, because he was in the position of power, a husband, once he got to a place in his relationship with his wife, he's like, you know, this just isn't working out. He could go through a legal procedure, give her a certificate of divorce, and this, to some degree in their society, would make her an honest woman when she would want to get married to another man. Because women, after all, in order to really be able to exist physically in that day and time, especially in times before Jesus, they needed to be in a marital relationship, to have a man to provide for them. But what the men in Moses' day and time were doing, they were just bartering and trading out and swapping wives, and everybody thought, oh, this is fine. Moses was like, well, let's get some sort of order to this situation. And so that's what Moses puts in place. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount and in Matthew 19 says, let's back up even more before Moses. Let's get back to Adam and Eve. Because from the very beginning, what God designed marriage to be was not some sort of transaction. Not some sort of benefit of what can I get out of this? What can he or she do for me? What is the best possible arrangement for my physical existence? Marriage was to be between two people who mutually loved, supported, encouraged, and submitted to one another. The problem with marriage in Jesus' day is that men were using this process that Moses put in place to say, you know, Caroline, I've been married 11 years. It's been a good 11 years, but, you know, I'm just sort of getting tired of her. I can complain about this. She's looking at me. I've got to be careful how I word this. It's a hypothetical situation, especially before she leaves the country. But I'm tired of this. She's not meeting this standard. It was good while it lasted. Caroline, here's your certificate. Go find yourself another man. I'm going to go find one who pleases me now. Trade in the old model for something newer. We use that kind of terminology today, don't we? And Jesus looks around and says, how's this working out for us? This isn't working at all. And guess what? You say you don't commit adultery. This is how adultery exists in our world. You swap out one wife for another. You don't know what it means to be committed to each other. The men in Matthew 19 tell Jesus, oh, this is the way it is. It's just better not to get married. Do you know why they react that way? The same reason why people react that way today. Because they view marriage as just this, you know what? This is about what I can get out of another person. It's the same reason why people were suffering from the problems of lust. They treated the opposite sex as one to fulfill their desires and gratification, not just sexually, although that was part of it. But what can this person do for me? And as soon as I'm tired of my wife, or for women, as soon as I'm tired of my husband these days, it wouldn't have been really a possibility for women back then. But as soon as we're tired, as soon as somebody doesn't meet up to our standards, as soon as things aren't working out, let's just go our own ways and try again. And all of the brokenness that follows behind that, the brokenness of how we view one another, the brokenness of how we view marriage, the brokenness of our children and what they believe marriage is supposed to be, what it means to have a mother and a father who mutually love one another. Everything was broken. Yes, Jesus says that there are certain situations in which divorce is permissible. Sometimes I'm afraid when we read Matthew 5, verses 31 and 32, or Matthew 19, verses 1 through 9, that our immediate thoughts, because we deal with the real issue of divorce today, but our immediate thoughts go to, under what situations can somebody get divorced? Well, Jesus lays those out. But let me say this. That is not Jesus' primary point. Jesus' primary point is not to say, here are the conditions or here are the situations under which people can get divorced. Jesus' main point is, I want people to be married. I want people to stay married. I want people to view marriage as God views it. Not as Moses allowed it under the law. Not as the world teaches and practices it. I want you to try something brand new. I want you to stay committed to each other. I want you to be sacrificial and not just think, what does this other person have to offer me? What am I getting out of this arrangement? Now, don't get me wrong. In marriage, we are to serve one another. And yes, if young people, our children, when we're teaching them about their future lives and their prospects of getting married, I do want them to find somebody who's going to serve them, who's going to love them sacrificially. But you know what I need to teach my children as well? That if you want a good marriage, you need to love unconditionally. You need to love sacrificially. And you don't just view this as, how much money does he make? How good looking is she? What's our future going to be like from a physical perspective? You look at what this person's heart is, and you have the same heart as well. That's the only way marriage works. If you have two people mutually committed to that relationship. This weekend, we've honored Faye. Many of you know that in Charlie's last couple of years, that her fulfilling her vows to him was not the easiest. And any of you who've ever dealt with an aging spouse, whether because of declining health physically, declining health mentally, and the emotional turmoil that comes with that, if those people would have viewed marriage the way the world viewed marriage in Jesus' day or in our day, there'd come a point where you'd say, I'm not getting anything out of this. It's time to hit the road. Faye and Charlie were married 60 years. She could have said, you know, 58 years was really good. But she and others of you in the audience and others still in the world today have said, you know what? It's not about what I'm getting out of this. It's about what it means to love my spouse. It's about what it means to be committed. It's about the way God designed marriage between man and woman. And even when the days are hard, and even when the commitment is a challenge, that's what it's about. And that's not just for after we've been married 50 or 60 years. That's for when we've been married 2 and 3 years. The unselfishness that sees people to the end of their days, the only reason why that happened is because when these people were young, they said, this is what it means to be husband and wife. You have heard that it was said. We've heard a lot of things in our world today when it comes to the topics of lust, adultery, marriage, divorce, sexuality. The old things, the things that keep being said over and over again, they're not working. They're not serving us well. You know, some people would call Jesus' view of marriage and Jesus' teachings here old or old-fashioned. They couldn't be more wrong. You know why? They've never had a chance to be new. In order for something to be new, you got to give it a try. The vast majority of the world has never even tried Jesus' way of doing things. When we begin to view one another, especially the opposite sex, as a soul and not as a physical object, it will transform us from within. And if we collectively take that approach, it will transform us as a society and as a world. If we view marriage as a mutual submission, an unconditional love, and a lifetime commitment, think about that, just that one situation, what that would do for our lives and for the world. You have heard that it was said is not working. But what Jesus says to us, it will make us new and it will make all things new. This morning, if you need to come to Him, if you've never put Jesus on in baptism, you can make that great decision, the greatest decision of all. As important as marriage is, the decision to give your life to Jesus, that far exceeds everything else, and it changes everything in your life. If you need to do that this morning, we hope that you'll make that decision. For those of us who are Christians, let us live after the new ways of Jesus. Let us share them with others. Let us show the power of His transformation in our lives. If you need to come to Him this morning, please do so while we stand and sing.